What's up, everyone? Welcome back to a fun-filled episode of Between the Tackles. My kids are asleep. They're quiet. It is a glorious night because it is also Super Bowl week. We got a fun-filled episode tonight. I'm here with my buddy Manish. What do we got in store for tonight?
Well, we're really fortunate to welcome John Hansen, and I think anyone who has ever played fantasy football knows who John Hansen is. One of the pioneers of fantasy football analysis dating back 30 some odd years. Now the founder of fantasypoints.com. The fantasy points data is under the umbrella of fantasypoints.com. John also hosts a daily show Monday to Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern time on VSiN Live. Prop Bets, Prop Points is the name of the show in which John delves deep into sports wagering. Also, without elongating his resume, because I could go on probably for 15 minutes, Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Fame member, former, again, pioneer of fantasy football, the fantasy guru. You can find him on X at fantasy_guru. But today we are diving deep into the Super Bowl prop bets, parlays, things that so many millions of people are going to be interested in the run-up to Super Bowl 60. So, John, welcome. We're really happy to have you.
Manish, great to chop it up with you. Burge, nice to meet you. It was awesome introduction. Thank you very much. And I always, whenever I see you or we meet, I always, and I'll get this out of the way right at the top, I always harken back to the first time you and I met. I think it was like 23 years ago. You did a story on me for the Newark Star Ledger, and you were very kind. You were very nice. And I will say I was very arrogant at that time. And I spent a lot of time thinking, like, maybe you didn't even notice it, but I know I was. And I thought, like, well, why the hell was I like that? And I realized why, because I was working literally 19 hours a day doing all this stuff. So I always equated it to, like, you know, Michael Irvin, one of the most arrogant, obnoxious dudes of all time. But he backed it up, and he was arrogant because he did the work. So I've been doing this for 30 years, as you mentioned, and still have that, you know, burning desire to get it right. I'm addicted to being right. So happy to be here.
Yeah, well, the great thing about John is, radio star, TV star, now internet star, also an actor, which we'll get into a little bit later as well. But I know that, Bird, you wanted to start off with some of the NFL news of the day.
Yeah, there was some pretty big breaking news today out of you guessed it, the Hall of Fame, again, snubbing another member of the Patriots dynasties. And Robert Kraft, he was not voted in, according to reports with ESPN today. Me, I'm a lifelong Patriots fan. It drives me nuts how underrepresented those early teams are. And this just feels like something fishy's going on here. John, coming in, I'll put you on the spot. What do you think about Robert Kraft not getting into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think there are always going to be certain people in a pool of voters, let's say, who are going to be a little old school curmudgeon-y about it and view, you know, their actions as being, antithetical to, you know, the movement of the NFL, I guess. So they feel like these people must pay some sort of penance. So not something I spend a ton of time thinking about. Unfortunately, I'm a Vikings fan. Rest in peace, Bud Grant. We've had, like, in my opinion, no offense, one great coach, of all time, and no owner as good as Robert Kraft. I'll say that. No offense to the Wilfs, but look, that's a good problem to have. Let's put it this way: if you're a little butthurt as a Patriot fan because your guy didn't get into the Hall, it's like, okay, good problem to have. I understand, though, he is getting up there, and certainly, you know, it's kind of like Jerry Jones is in. I get it. I get the frustration a little bit, but I'm sure it's just a little, you know, slap on the wrist penance, and I'm sure he'll get voted in.
I am a noted admitter of being a spoiled Patriots fan. Like, I get that I've been so spoiled my whole life. I'm 36 years old. Basically, the entire time that I've been able to follow football, The Patriots have been winning. So This drought, this five-year drought, was so long. It was so long to get back into this big game here. But Manish, let's move it along. Let's start talking about the game upcoming here.
Yeah, I mean, given that you are a Vikings fan, I'm sure you've got some, you know, perhaps residual ill feelings that the guy who is in the game this week could or should have been the quarterback for the Vikings this year in Sam Darnold. I wanted to get in, before we talk about specific prop bets, just what your process is. I mean, what is the art of prop bets? You get a game, you see what the numbers are, what the over-unders are. How do you go about, figuring out which ones you want to touch and which ones you want to kind of stay away from, and which are, you know, some of the smarter ones? Because obviously, look, no one's coming close to batting 1,000, but there has to be some kind of, you know, method behind your choices each game.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did retire. We were just talking off the air, you know, from the SiriusXM morning show, but I kind of converted it into fantasy points every morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio channel. And I was trying to kind of like retire because I've been holding all these jobs for all these years and all that. And then my buddy Steve Cohen from, you know, from Sirius, who had kind of retired from there, kind of took over programming over at VSiN, and he kind of, you know, talked me into it. He's like, you know, you should really do this show. And I'm like, you know, it really is something different. And the bottom line is it's right in my wheelhouse. I'm not actually a big gambler per se. I'm a fantasy guy, but I'm an X and O guy. I'm a matchup guy. I'm a stat guy and a data guy. So I'm not the greatest person to really get into the hardcore gambling strategies. Certainly I understand, you know, the odds and all that. So my process is pretty much the same as I've always done for 30 plus years, is I build projections for every player for, you know, season and for every week. And a lot goes into those projections. It's really, you know, football, you know, you're talking snap share, target share, route share, matchup, schematics, all that stuff that goes into the projection. So then irrespective of what the books have, I'm like, well, I got Jackson Smith and Jigba with 95 yards in this game. Then I'm like, okay, we go there. And then we look at the projections, and then we have tools at fantasypoints.com that parses through everything. And I just look for the discrepancies. Basically, if I'm 30% or more, if my projection is 30% or more higher than the line, then it's a good play. The higher that percentage, the better. So that's it. You know, I'm also, you know, certainly considering everything, the spread, the anticipated game flow, the actual matchup, the health of the player, other injuries, and it all goes into that projection though. So at the end of the day, it's just, this is what I've been doing for 30 years. And now it's a big thing, which, by the way, not to toot my own horn, but I did see this coming. You're literally talking to the first person who owned playerprops.com. yours truly. I bought it in 1999 or something. You know, and then I kept paying for the registration and not doing anything with it. I'm like, one year, I was like, forget it. I forgot to renew it. Not that it's like this huge, valuable domain, but I absolutely saw this coming. I was about 15 years too early on it, but here we are. And yeah, I do enjoy the process of isolating every element involved with a specific player, coming up with a projection and comparing it to the markets.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've always wondered when projections come out, what the thought process is. Let's just start off with the quarterbacks. I mean, everything, you know, flows off of the quarterbacks. You know, Drake May, MVP candidate, likely will finish second behind Matthew Stafford. Sam Darnold, just an incredible story of perseverance, you know, given the ups and downs throughout the course of his career after being the number three overall.
And a shout out to you. You are a big Darnold guy.
I am a big Darnold guy. I have, like, as we spoke to Jordan Palmer, who's Darnold's personal quarterbacks coach, a few days ago, and I did tell him that I have the moniker of being the resident Sam Darnold apologist for the last decade or so. So it's good to see Darnold do well. When you look at this matchup specifically, what I thought was interesting was that, you know, the Patriots have had a solid defense all year, and they've taken it up a notch in the playoffs. But specifically, as it relates to pressure, they've blitzed 41% of the time in these three playoff games, which is an exceedingly high amount and much higher than their regular season percentage. Darnold you know, in a clean pocket, incredible. Under duress, there can be some shaky moments. Now, obviously, yeah, he's risen to the occasion recently. Yeah. But when I looked at your Darnold bets and Darnold props specifically, you got the over on passing yards at, what, 228.5?
Yeah.
You do have him throwing at least one interception. Can you kind of take me through why would you take Darnold in the over for passes? Why do you think he'll throw a pick? And also a fascinating one. I'm not sure I agree with it, but you have him going over 29.5 pass attempts as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of sometimes in a one game thing, I try to kind of think like the coaches. I'll give an example. Last year, this time, obviously Saquon Barkley was all world, and it was a little counterintuitive, though I felt this way that, you know, they would, and I kept saying, they're going to go Belichick in on our asses and they're going to take them out. And, you know, maybe that's a little overly simplistic, but that's kind of what happened. So I bet the under, I played the under. That was like my best bet of the last year's Super Bowl is under rushing. And then correspondingly, I'm like, well, he is Saquon Barkley, so let's go over on his receiving yardage and his catch total. So I kind of view it like this. I mean, obviously Vrabel is from the tree. So if you're Bill Belichick, you're playing in the Super Bowl against Sam Darnold, you're going to probably do everything you can to make sure that it's Darnold who beats you and not Kenneth Walker, basically. Again, that's probably a little overly simplistic, but look, they can throw a lot of different things at him. You know, you mentioned the pressure. And by the way, I was a Darnold guy too. I liked him too. I kind of waved the white flag, you know, 5 years into the, after like Carolina, maybe. I'm like, all right, well, I guess it's not happening here. Because, you know, his inability to deal with pressure, he kind of had a panic attack, but he's getting better and better and better. And I will say, you know, and again, I'm not truly studying the X's and O's, but this has kind of been my thing, you know, the whole guru thing. Like sometimes I kind of know, I can't really articulate it, but I just kind of know that Darnold is getting better coaching this year than he got last year. I mean, last year was good. He had all these playoff come from behind wins. Kevin O'Connell, look, I'm a Vikings fan. I still don't know about Kevin O'Connell. I kind of think, well, first of all, he's been better. He's dealt with pressure better. There were a couple snaps where, you know, I guess they showed man last week and then they slipped in the zone. That's kind of how you could get Sam off track. You know, you show something pre-snap and then you slide into something else. Well, he kind of dealt with it pretty well. I kind of think Clint Kubiak might be better than Kevin O'Connell. So the question, by the way, which has been posed to me a lot, do I regret Darnold leaving? No, I don't, because Darnold, gotta love him. Hope he doesn't get a big head about this. Oh, wait, too late. Your guy's got a huge cranium. I don't know if you ever noticed that about him, but I don't think he would have done this in Minnesota, especially behind their offensive line. It was a disaster this year.
How do you feel, John, about there's one specific bet. It just kind of jumps out at me when I look at all the Darnold bets, and it goes back to what I said a minute ago about how the Patriots are ramping up the pressure at, you know, 40 plus percent. You can get plus money, plus 142 for Darnold rushing for 10 yards. And all it takes is for him to escape the pocket because the Patriots are, you know, blitzing and, right, you know, and run for, you know, 10 yards. Or, you know, this is not the longest rush of the game. This is his total for the game. It just seems like the idea of getting plus money for 10 right, yards, for a very athletic player. People maybe are seeing that now, but didn't realize that. But he's always been mobile, and
yeah,
he looks to throw the ball. But the idea of, you know, a team blitzing at that rate, you would think that an athletic quarterback should be able to manage, you know, 10 plus yards in a game rushing.
Yeah, I did. You know, I do an exercise where I take pretty much every play, and I don't make it an official play, but I pick a side. I did take the over on his rushing. Now, I did actually take the under on his attempts. So, I mean, again, we're fine tuning here, but I do think he'll get a couple of carries, and, you know, 10 yards isn't too much to ask. I will say, you know, one thing I try to do, there's so many bets available. You know, one good rule is if the guy's got anything close to an injury, Just forget it. And he did. He does have that oblique. And who knows? Apparently, last time out though, before the last game in the NFC title game, apparently he barely practiced that week. Yeah. So that might scare me off of it. But if I had to do it, I would absolutely go over on that as well.
Just to flip it, and Burge, I know Burge has a bunch of stuff he wants to ask you, but flip it to the other side. I thought one of your prop suggestions is an interesting one, and that's to take the under on Drake May's 37.5 rushing yards. And
right.
For all of the success that May has had in the regular season, he really hasn't been particularly impressive through the air in the postseason,
right.
But he has made difference-making plays and big difference-making plays with his legs. So I looked at that number initially and thought, well, 37.5, I mean, I'm going to take the over on that. Why do you like the under?
You know, I can't say I love it. It's just a big number. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know he's hit it in, what, two of his last three. But over the course of the whole season, you know, that was – I could probably look it up right now while we're doing it. I mean, that was probably, you know, just a bit much. I mean, they have given up some rushing production to quarterbacks. I mean, Matt Stafford even got some production last week. But, you know, they are also – you know, a zone heavy team. And, you know, sometimes they've got, you know, every blade of grass on the field kind of covered. So 37. So how many times has he gone over 38? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that's 7 out of what? 20 games.
They played 20 so far.
That's a fairly low percentage. There was like 38 or something like that. 40%. I don't know. But, yeah, so I just thought that was kind of a big number, but I will say it's on the bottom of my list when I rank them at the end of the week, like, you know, prioritize them. It is kind of going to be a little buried here. I can't say I love it, but that is a play I did make because I think it's a little too high. I felt that way a couple weeks ago, and I believe I did hit that in the Houston game. He only got 10 yards that game.
Yeah,
so I find it interesting because obviously the way Drake May and the Patriots offense has played through the three games leading up to the Super Bowl here, they've played against three really good defenses and they're running into a fourth, right. You know, a top defense in the Seattle Seahawks. You know, the passing game has not looked good for the New England Patriots. And, you know, I got your email about a guy you like in this game. That's Travion Henderson. Can you kind of expound as to why you think he's going to be a major factor into this one, as opposed to Ramondre Stevenson, who seems to have gotten a lion's share of the work in the postseason?
Oh yeah. I mean, look, you know, I think it reminds me a little bit, and I got so many damn notes here, I'm losing track of it all. But I have to say, it reminds me a little bit of James White in the 2017 playoffs, Burge, and maybe you can remember, mm-hmm. You can recall this. I know this because I actually tabbed him as my sleeper of the game. Now, people are like, oh, how the hell did you know that? I'm like, well, duh, Matt Ryan was the reigning MVP that year. The Falcons had the best offense in the league. So I thought maybe they could jump out to a lead, and then James White would have to be the hurry-up back, which totally happened. But, you know, in that year in the playoffs, he only had, by the way, the first two games that year, he only had one carry for 0 yards, and he only had four catches for like 26 yards. I mean, he had like five touches going into that Super Bowl. And what happened? He had 14 catches for 110, 16 targets. He had just a monster game.
Should have been the MVP.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying we're going to be anywhere near this, but what I am saying is it is a little unusual how last week he was a complete non-factor. Now, we all know Ramondre's been very good. We have fantasy points data. I'm tracking the data. Ramondre's been crushing zone concept runs, man gap runs. I mean, he's been good, but it's just a little weird. For me, I think they're 4.5-point underdogs. They're going to have to pull something out of there, you know what, to kind of probably pull off, you know, the upset. And they're going to need explosive plays. So I just look at these numbers here, and it's pretty absurd. Like, for example, with Travion, over 18.5 rushing yards. I mean, really? And now he hasn't hit it in 4 straight games. But guess what? Before that, he opened the season, he hit this 16 straight games. I mean, come on. You know, even the receiving, I like that as well. All you need to do is get 1 yard. One, you hit that in 15 of 20 games, 75% of the time. So again, if you're Mike Vrabel, you got to throw something different. You want to get a changeup, an explosive, you know, it's Travion Henderson all day long. So how about this one? Plus 2,200 to have the most rushing yards in the game. I don't think that is that big of an ask considering his home run potential.
You know, it's funny. There is a school of thought that maybe he's wearing down a little bit, because I thought it was ironic just the way that the Patriots season started in the backfield and where it was 2 weeks ago in Denver. Who would have thought after those early fumbles that Ramondre Stevenson had he would be the guy carrying the load in a snow game with a berth to the Super Bowl on the line? As it relates to Henderson, he only played 4 snaps, which was eye-opening to me. Yeah. I don't know if he's worn down. You know, it's a long college season. Obviously, it's a long NFL season. That's certainly possible. I love all the prop bets that you outlined. And if you look, Next Gen Stats also has prop bets. And some of these are, I think they're just ripe for the taking for Henderson, simply because he is a blazer and a home run hitter, as you mentioned. Yeah. He's plus 850 to be the fastest ball carrier. And, you know, they count, they have miles per hour with the chip in the ball. So I mean, that to me is an incredible bet. Also, the longest distance run of the game, he's at plus 2,500. That's even better than the plus 2,000 that you.
It really is. At. You're right. You're right.
And for a guy, I mean, this guy's a home run hitter and he's got blazing speed. That's partly why the Patriots invested an early round pick in him. So, you know, I look at, like, these obscure bets that almost seem too good to be true. Now, they're probably not going to hit, but when I initially thought there, you know, I found out there was a fastest ball carrier bet, the first person I thought of was Henderson and then Rashid Shaheed. But the fact that the odds are so good, to me, is like, that's the type of bet that screams, you know, take it.
Right. Which likely means that Rashid Shaheed gets, a jet sweep carry runs for 26 miles an hour.
Right. Exactly. I mean, there's a method behind the madness, but I love the Henderson because as you know, John, there's such recency bias with betting.
Exactly.
Guy hasn't done anything for a week or two. He's dead. You kind of forget what he's capable of.
He's dead until he rips a 30-yard runoff in the first quarter of the Super Bowl. And all of a sudden he's back. He's alive. Right.
And then everybody's kicking themselves. Oh, why didn't I make this bet? It seemed so obvious in retrospect. Yeah.
And by the way, you could do his total rushing receiving yardage it's another ridiculous one, like 23 and a half or something like that. Once again, that's something he could rip off on one play.
Exactly. And those are the guys, like, if you're looking for bets like that, anyone who's got home run potential is in play. I mean, I'll flip it over to the other side with Kenneth Walker now. You know, I think, and we can get into Super Bowl MVP stuff a little bit later, but Kenneth Walker to me is in line to, I think he's in line to have a monster game. And I know that if you look statistically, especially in the first half of the season, the Patriots were pretty stout against the run, but just the way that Seattle is built, you know, and we can talk more broadly about matchups. I think that Seattle wins this game, even if Sam Darnold doesn't play at a particularly high level. Now, he can't repeat what C.J. Stroud did, of course, a few weeks back, but they can win without Darnold carrying the load, whereas I don't think that's possible against this defense for New England if May doesn't play at a really high level. Where do you fall on kind of where these quarterbacks have to play in order for their teams to have a realistic chance to win?
Well, interesting, even though I took the under on Drake May on the rushing prop, I do believe like last time they're going to need May to make a couple of first down conversions, maybe run a touchdown in with his legs. I do think his legs are going to be a factor. You know, he could be a huge factor and run for 31 yards and still not hit the prop. You know, the one thing about Walker, and I will say I've been a hater of Ken Walker, but, you know, in my defense, I call him, I'm like, well, look, I know what you can have as a career once the NFL thing's over. You become a bouncer. because that's what you do, Ken Walker. You freaking bounce everything to the outside. He's very good, and they have a very good outside zone running game, but it is a little annoying. And that's, by the way, why they drafted Zach Charbonnet, because he's more of the downhill, you know, guy, and, you know, take those 4 yards right there. Ken Walker, he's looking for 40 on every run, but, you know, their running game again is very good. They can get by a couple games with Walker as their main guy. And you're right, their run defense was very, very good. Then they fell off, and now they've been good again. But by the way, they just shut down recently a Devon Achane-less Dolphin team, the Chargers, Texans, Broncos. I mean, that's not a lot of competition. Over their last 6 games, including 3 in the playoffs, they have given up the 4th most explosive yards. And they did back in December, you know, they got run on by the Bills, Ravens, and Jets like big time. So they also give up 4.4 yards per carry on the zone runs that are near and dear to Walker's heart, and a pretty good success rate. So, yeah, my only problem with it is, again, the Pats know this, and I think they'd rather lose with Sam Darnold having a brilliant game than get run all over by Ken Walker.
Yeah, the other element of Walker that, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. You're right, he does bounce out a lot. He was 2nd in the NFL in missed tackle rate, so he can make you miss and make you look bad. Yeah. And that's not only this year. This year he was 2nd in missed tackle rate. I think since he entered the NFL, only Josh Jacobs has forced more missed tackles than Ken Walker.
Ridiculously talented.
Yeah, and I mean, especially given the fact that he's missed a lot of time due to injury. So it's not as if he's playing a full 17-game season, I should say.
Right.
I will say with the Patriots run defense, though, a lot of their downfall in the middle of the season was because Milton Williams was hurt.
True. That's very true.
And Milton Williams, since he's come back, has transformed that defense, and they've returned kind of to what they were.
No doubt.
Were early in the season. And that continuing in the playoffs would be what would give me pause on the Kenneth Walker MVP talk over there.
That's what makes this game hard, actually. From a prop perspective, because, oh, by the way, everyone's good, right? I mean, you're in the Super Bowl. You better have a damn good defense. So nobody really has a great matchup. By the way, I think the 2 best individual matchups to me are for Hunter Henry and Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp is coming off basically his best 2-game run of the season. He'll see Marcus Jones a lot. They've been playing man. And he gives up a decent fantasy point per route run number, the most in their secondary. I mean, he's good, but I think he's beatable. And then for Hunter Henry, he's always been Mr. Zone Beater. He's not that great against man, but, you know, Seattle, they run a ton of zone, although they played some man last week, and you never know, they might mix it up. But generally speaking, Seattle's really tough on the outside. They go deep at corner. They're versatile. They can man up on you if need be, but they're zone based. So everything kind of gets funneled, and they have been giving the tight end. So I do like Hunter Henry. It's the best matchup, individual matchup in the game.
What do you think about the high profile matchup, JSN versus Christian Gonzalez? Because I think last week that Gonzalez traveled with Courtland Sutton, even in the slot. I don't know if it was 100% of the time, but fair amount of the time he was shadowing Sutton. And you would imagine that he would do something similar against JSN.
Yeah, I have to say, I think JSN, number one, is almost uncoverable. And, you know, especially when he's lining up in the backfield now, it's been a new wrinkle. But, you know, Gonzalez is good. There's no doubt about it. I just, you know, and again, this is one of the things where I might be talking about my you-know-what. But, you know, I think that he's very good. But I think Surtain is at a – he's not at Surtain's level. I mean, he's not Revis. Like, he's not even close to that. I do think he can be had. So, I mean, even, you know, based on alignment numbers, that's the matchup, you know, because JSN, the left receiver, and he has been stingy. They don't give up a lot to that left receiver spot. But again, they're also playing man, and there's not a bad schematic matchup for JSN. You know, one of the reasons I love the fantasy points data is it really puts it into perspective. You know, there is not a bad schematic matchup for JSN. It's unbelievable. He's over 4 yards per route run against man coverage, which they've run 36% of the time in the playoffs. To put that into perspective, if you cut that in half, it's still really good. So that just tells you how good he is. He, again, probably uncoverable.
It's a big over-under, though, 93.5. What do you think?
I'd go over. I mean, I've every time I've done about 5 or 6 overs, and every time it's either hit or just missed. I mean, really
close.
Do you
get your money back if you just miss? Because if you do, let me know which state it is.
Oh, I know. But what I'm saying is, and this is what I say all the time, like, look, if you go with my picks, obviously you're going to lose, but I can tell you this, most of them are going to be close, which means you might, you know, have a couple weeks where you get a little lucky and those close losses turn into wins, and all of a sudden, you know, well, that's what I'm always looking for. That's why I put out too many props, because I'm like, oh, I got 20 props here. I should go 18-2 and then come out of it. I'm like, well, I guess I'm happy just going 12-8 over here in the National Fake You Out League.
Do you have any defensive props that jump out at you? If not, I got a couple questions.
Not really. I related to the defense. I think the thing I'm most confident in is I think it's going to be a little sloppy. So I do think both quarterbacks are throwing a pick. I mean, that I feel very good about. Fumbles. I haven't looked into that, but I mean, Sam Darnold fumbles a lot. And Drake May's been a little prone to it as well. I mean, it is weird in that, you know, we're going into this game with Drake May throwing for under 100 yards in one of the least productive title games we've ever seen. I mean, I understand the weather was a little bit of a factor, but it is a little weird how it's just been so brilliant all year, yet we are devolving on a weekly basis. Maybe the 2 weeks will help it out. Maybe that shoulder was something, but it is a little unusual.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating to me on a broader scale. I personally don't think it's going to be as competitive as people believe, but if you look at the data from this season, neither team has lost by more than 7 points in any game. So logic would dictate on paper that it'll be relatively close.
Right.
The first half line is 3.5. So the Patriots are getting 3.5. They've played 20 games this year. They've only trailed at halftime once, and it's only been tied once. So there's a 90% chance that they will be leading at halftime.
Yeah.
Given, you know, this, the way the season has unfolded to this point, would you take the 3.5 points in the first half? Pats plus 3.5 for the first half line?
Yeah, I mean, Mike Vrabel, and you know, you've been around the block. You know, some coaches have it, and he's legit, man. They're going to be ready to play, and they're going to play for him. So that's probably one of the reasons that they are fast starters. You know, I could tell you this, not that it's Belichick or Vrabel, but I was able to work with Charlie Weiss for a year. I did a show with him once a week, couple hours a week. And you know, my big takeaway is the Patriot way. There's no magic formula. I mean, it's all common sense, you know, be on time, you know, do your job. Like they might have a couple of Machiavellian things up their sleeve in general, but like it's pretty much all just basic common sense. And Vrabel's kind of certainly adopted that, and they will be ready to play. So, yeah, I could see them. I do think it'll be relatively close. So, yeah, I have no problem with it based on everything we just said. They are fast starters.
So with the 4.5 number, would you take the Pats with the points, or would you go with Seattle minus the points?
Yeah, I really, because I'm so damn into the prop world. It's a great number. It really is a great number. I think I might take the points. I might. I haven't decided yet. Not that anyone cares, because honestly, I have not picked a game against the spread all year, quite frankly. I probably should the Super Bowl, though. And we are recording this on Tuesday. I've already had a full week to think about it. You would think I would be be ready to go. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm still – there's something about it for me. I might be weird in this regard. During the season, I cannot fully wrap my head around anything until after the Friday practice. There's just something about that final practice report and injury report, you know, that really puts everything into perspective for me. Not that it's going to be anything revealing this year. It's the Super Bowl. Everybody plays hurt, but but I do think it will be competitive. I will say this. I probably go under on the total.
I agree with that. It's 45 and a half.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I think it'll be close, but I think I prefer an under. I don't think we're going to have this big shootout type of situation. I think it might, like I said, I might be a little sloppy as well with some turnovers.
What do you fall on tackles, tackle prop bets? I typically stay away from them, but I so badly want to put down a tackle prop bet for Leonard Williams, partly because I'm a little bit biased because, you know, I was there when Leonard entered the league with the Jets.
Yeah.
I wanted to see him do well, but what I found was interesting is that other than Myles Garrett, Leonard Williams had the most tackles on pass plays for any defensive lineman in the NFL this season. And given the fact that you think that it's going to be a relatively close game, I think there'll be opportunities for Leonard Williams to get three tackles. And if he gets three tackles, it's a plus 217, which is, to me, a relatively enormous number. To me, that's incredible value. And again, this is coming from someone who typically does not make tackle bets, but that one really kind of jumped off the page to me.
That's a little out of my realm because we have a guy, believe it or not, at Fantasy Points who only does IDP.
Okay.
The guy's absolutely brilliant though. And there's a bunch of different cheat codes, you know, some stadiums score tackles and assists a little bit more liberally.
Right.
But yeah, I certainly can see that because, you know, you look at Drake May. Again, we're talking about the man threw for 86 yards last week. I mean, so Mike Vrabel is – what's that?
He ran for almost 70.
That's true. But that means, his legs and Ramondre's legs and, fingers crossed, Trevion's legs are going to be very involved here as they not take the air out of the football, for God's sakes. But again, the man did throw for 86 yards. You do have a – couple of backs who are dangerous, so I'm sure they'll run as much as they possibly can.
Where do you fall? I'm sorry to backtrack here, but it just kind of dawned on me. We had talked about Ken Walker, and obviously there had been a split backfield with Walker and Charbonnet, with Charbonnet now out of the picture. There's a great prop bet with this George Halani, the other running back that Seattle has. You can get plus money, 140, if he gets 15 yards. Is it possible that he would get enough carries to get 15 yards? Do you think that's a good bet?
I it's not bad. Because again, I think you do need to bring a little bit of a different look than Walker. And that's, again, I believe, my opinion, didn't they use two consecutive second round picks on running backs, which is a little weird. I think that's why they did it. So, I just don't know. One game, maybe you could do it. But Ken Walker, again, he's not the kind of guy I think we're going to line up. We're going to run it with Ken Walker 21 times. I don't see that. I think you got to work in another guy. And they love Halani. Halani looked great, by the way, in the preseason. I mean, that dude runs hard as hell.
I want to move to a little bit more of the team props. Total fourth down conversions in this game. We've talked kind of quite a bit on this podcast about these coaches not taking the points. Mike Vrabel's done it a few times. I'm not sure on the numbers on Mike McDonald, but the over under for fourth down conversions for, I think, both teams in this game is 1.5. So for me, I'm like, I would take the over on that just because of how aggressive these coaches have been this year.
Yeah. And for New England, you know, one thing that did dawn on me, after I did that May prop, again, I do think that rushing prop's a little high, but again, this is for all the marbles. We're just talking about May throwing for 86. So how about we get a few more design quarterback runs for May? So
I love that
would make a lot of sense. I don't know about Darnold, but, at the very least there's one half of the equation. So yeah.
That's what I got. I can go on. I can go. I have
some. We probably buried the lead here. But there's some weird non-football related props that are related to the, you know, to the programming of the game. I got to be honest. I think this is my lock prop of the week. It's got nothing to do with what's going to happen on the field. But will Sam Darnold seeing ghosts be mentioned during the broadcast? It's a plus 550 that it will be mentioned. And for some reason, a minus 1,000 that it won't be mentioned. I can't see any scenario, John, where they don't bring it up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, could you see them like last week? Did they say, well, we're at the end of the game and Sam Darnold hasn't seen any ghosts yet?
A little bit different because they're not actually playing the Patriots. Now you got four quarters at some point for Collinsworth or Tirico, or I mean, I don't even know who's doing the game. I think it's those guys. Right. For one of those guys to throw it in there, I cannot see a scenario where you go 3 hours plus and knowing Darnold's history with the Patriots, that doesn't come up. That to me, I mean, we can talk about over-unders on quarterbacks, interceptions, yards, all that stuff. That right. seems like the lock of the century that they're going to mention it.
Yeah, no, it probably will. Sometimes, you know, big broadcasts, a lot of pressure, the cliches just fly. There's roll off the tongue. By the way, are you with me on the fact that Sam Darnold, no offense, my man has a massive cranium. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's, you know, sure. I mean, I covered a quarterback. Look, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I covered a Jets quarterback that had a larger head.
Really?
And yes, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh.
Without a doubt. And I remember Bart Scott had a nickname for Fitz. God, I can't remember what it was. It was Pinky in the Brain, I think.
Oh, wow. Well, look.
Nickname that Bart had for Fitz, and Fitz embraced it. So, look, both those guys, really smart people. So, hey.
Exactly. You know? I mean, the man went to Harvard. The guy's got a massive brain. So,
yeah, and that's, I mean, Sam Darnold, a very underrated, intelligent guy. So
That's funny. You know, in 2005, I went to his combine. You were probably there. Aaron Rodgers combine. And I just happened to have a friend in South Jersey whose family used to live on the West Coast decades earlier, related to Ryan Fitzpatrick, basically. So my friend's father was brothers with Ryan Fitzpatrick's grandfather.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, that's pretty close. So I went and I talked with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the old Colt Stadium. This is, I believe this is the, what was it? The RCA Dome. This is before Lucas Oil.
Yeah. RCA Dome was before, but then they played outside before then, but yeah.
Right. But the combine podium experience deal.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Nobody, you know, he's like, there's like two dudes at his podium. He's Ryan Fitzpatrick out of Harvard. Nobody knows who he is, but I did. And I talked with him for 20 minutes, 15 minutes. I'm like, it's like talking to a 35-year-old man.
Right.
He was 22 years old, old soul. He was awesome. I was so happy to see him have that great career because my friend and his father was a sports fan. They were into it. You know, they were really into it. So it was great. What a career.
Yeah. Great career. It's funny. Cause when I covered him, I always thought that he wouldn't be interested in staying in the sport after he was done playing, but I think he's done such a terrific job on television. Really brings quality analysis, and you know, Fitz is never shy to kind of be a showman. So yeah. I think you've seen him without a shirt on many, many times.
Yeah. I mean, the whole beard thing, I had a lot of fun with that beard, man. I mean, that thing was
brilliant guy. Kids are brilliant. I mean, brilliant. One of his sons is, my God, that guy was like solving the Rubik's Cube when he was like 7 years old. I mean, just a brilliant family. But yeah, he, you know, so again, circling back to Darnold's physical, you know, head size, not the largest headed quarterback that I've covered.
Wow, that's impressive.
All right, so I got a couple other ones. You know, given that it is Seattle versus the Patriots, there is a prop, unsurprisingly, about whether there'll be a Seattle pass attempt from the 1 yard line, which obviously resulted in disaster the last time they played the Patriots, and Malcolm Butler picking off Russell Wilson. You get plus 550 if Seattle attempts a pass from the 1 yard line. I gotta be honest with you. I think I like it. I think I like it. I can see the Seattle thrown from the 1 yard line, you know, if given the opportunity.
I mean, it would be ballsy, but you know, again, yeah. I guess I'm still a little scarred, you know, from my Darnold experience last year. I mean, it was a great 3 months, but then we stunk out the joint two games in a row. That's why I was fine with him leaving again. I hope for the best, but I probably would not do that if I were running Seattle, but hey, pull out all the stops.
Yeah.
Have
you ever done this bet, which I admittedly have, you know, length of the national anthem. So Charlie Puth is singing the national anthem. The over under is 125 seconds. Now, if you do a little bit of digging, you would see that Charlie Puth has a 72 second rendition of the national anthem on YouTube. However, to complicate matters, he has said that he's going to kind of jazz up this rendition. And he's invoked Whitney Houston, who obviously took forever to sing her national anthem. So given all that information,
over
125 seconds, over or under on Charlie Puth's rendition.
How old is Charlie Puth? I'm guessing he's like 26.
Yeah. Well, he's an old soul. Speaking of old souls.
Well, that's what's confusing, because I was going to 34.
Okay.
I was going to go under because, you know, the attention spans, come on. They're not very good. I remember a couple of years ago was like, I don't know who it was. It was like Gladys Knight or somebody like that, like 3 years ago. And I opine, I'm like, well, let's think about this. This is an elderly woman. She's going to take her time, you know, no rush. I believe I looked up, she's from the South. You know, they don't go fast on everything. And I said, let's go over. And that did hit. So I'm going to go under on that. You know, I'm very disappointed because normally I vibe it out with heads or tails, and I'm not, it's not coming to me yet, but the week is still young.
All right. Let's bring it home to MVP.
I got one more of those. This is an interesting one. It's for the winning team. It's the Gatorade color of the Gatorade bath at the end of the Super Bowl. The blue, orange, and yellow are the leading favorites. I think it's purple and blue following behind that. But purple and blue have been out the last few times.
Right.
It's very interesting. And these odd bets are something that me, as somebody who's not truly a gambler, so like I don't get into the odds. I'm not a huge gambler. How do you think that's going to go? Do you got any intel on that?
Inside information on that, John?
It's not inside information. It's just the feels and the vibes. But you mentioned blue, right? And and red, right?
Blue, orange, and yellow.
Well, the yellow, you know, I was going to say, like, what about that lime? Because they have kind of Seattle's team color is one. That's out. Because there's, you know, Seattle, the blue, New England Patriots, there's a lot of blue there. I think that's out. So I think I might go orange because it's not related to any of the team colors.
That's where I would go. That's where I was going.
That's good deductive reasoning, John.
Really, we're just trying to use logic here. You know what I'm saying?
I do want to bring it back home to MVP. I mean, that's, you know, everyone speculates on how the game could look, you know, what the odds are. Sam Darnold, not surprisingly, is the MVP favorite. And then Drake May, not surprisingly again, is the second favorite. You would anticipate the quarterbacks to have the worst odds, you know, in terms of a betting perspective. Who do you like? Would you go chalk, Darnold or May, or would you go elsewhere?
You know, I might. I mean, we all know these damn things go to quarterbacks like insanely. So like the James White one that went to Brady, right? That didn't go to Edelman, did it?
No, that was the last Super Bowl went to Edelman.
Right. Now I lost my train of thought on what I was going to say there.
Well, quarterbacks typically will get it.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, there's no one on the Patriots to me stands out. Maybe Ramondre. I think that's the way to look at it. Like, okay, where are the non-quarterbacks who could truly just blow up? I'm not Ramondre, sure, but nobody else. I mean, Booty's going to see a lot of like Reek Woolen. They got people like Witherspoon. to cover Diggs. I'm not really seeing that. So to me, I think it's either Walker or JSN. Mm-hmm. You know, probably got to go to Walker then, you know, because if JSN does well, that's tied to Darnold, then they'll lean to Darnold. So I think it's one of the quarterbacks or Walker or bust.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. It's exceedingly difficult for a wide receiver to get an MVP. I mean, a guy's going to need 130, 140 yards. And typically, if he's getting 130, 140, the quarterback's probably over 200 with a couple touchdowns. I'm with you with Ken Walker. He's at plus 700. I love that. On the flip side, completely agree with you on Stevenson. You could see him getting, you know, 70, 80 yards, 90 yards, two touchdowns. He's at plus 3,000, which is incredible. Wow. I love Travion Henderson. We'll just bring it back to the guy that you love the best.
Hey, yeah.
Is it inconceivable that he could rattle off two long runs? That gives you there's your MVP. He's at plus 8,000. So the return is just unbelievable. And again, two home run plays, and there you go. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But I like to shy away from the quarterback because it's too easy. But then you get a little discouraged because, John, as you know, watching the Eagles and Chiefs last year, you could have given the MVP to any number of defensive players on Vic Fangio's side, and they ultimately gave it to Jalen Hurts, who I don't think was deserving for the MVP. He wasn't. If you watch the game, you know that the defense is the one that neutralized Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. But, I love Walker on Seattle, and both running backs, frankly, on New England would be, I think, smart plays.
I'm feeling out with Travion, I've looked at all the data. It's not great, but it's not great for Ramondre either. You know, Seattle's run defense is good. You know, you just got to find that X factor because there usually is something. The Patriots are notorious for that. Like, just when you think this is the thing, like, just when you think Travion is dead, that's when he has the game in the biggest game for all the marbles. So I'm in on pretty much anything Travion Henderson, if for no other reason than it's just these are good plays based on an entire season body of work and a skill set that is, let's be honest, electrifying and game breaking.
Absolutely. John, thank you very much for coming on the podcast with us tonight. I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl. I know Manish is. I'm sure you are. Manish, you want to plug his socials again? Close it out?
Yeah, well, I mean, he needs no introduction when it comes to the social. Fantasy_guru since, I think, the advent of X when it was Twitter.
Yeah.
You can catch him on Prop Points, VSiN Live, Monday to Friday, 1 to 2 Eastern Time. Also the founder of FantasyPoints.com. Fantasy Points data is a part of fantasypoints.com. A lot of great stuff there. John has been an entrepreneur, a pioneer in the fantasy sports space, now the sports wagering space, for the better part of 30 years. Also extremely confident. He might say cocky, but I love the assertiveness. We did not get into his acting career, but I have one quick acting question I'm going to sneak in there.
Okay. Sure.
There's word on the street is that you made an appearance on Curb Your Enthusiasm in which you yelled at Larry David. Could you give us a thumbnail on what that was all about?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you recall the show The League on FX, that was about all those guys in a fantasy league with Nick Kroll and a lot of guys, Mark Duplass, who ended up doing some really great things. Well, The founder of that, his name is Jeff Schaefer, and he's a big fantasy guy. He's a guy my age. Years ago, he called him to my office, and I had a national print magazine, and he was airing the pilot, and he wanted permission to use my magazine. And I was like, oh, absolutely. In fact, it was one of the characters reading it on the toilet, which I took as that was honored. I was honored for that. So then we kind of struck up a friendship, and then he wrote me into an episode of The League. And I was actually nice enough to bring in Adam Kaplan, my co-host. And so we did that, and that was 15 years ago. And by the way, in that episode, season 2, episode 10, I did say, and I quote, Sean Payton is evil for fantasy football. And 15 years later, he's still evil. But that show ended, and Jeff then, because Jeff Schaefer, he wrote for Seinfeld. right out of college. He went to Harvard, him and his two writing partners, Alec Berg, and another gentleman who did Veep, Dave Mandel. So these guys are very prolific. He went over and he, you know, became Larry David's right-hand man. So, and I'm like, oh, you ever need me for an extra, you know, let me know. So in 2010, for those who are big fans of the show, that season they shot all in New York. And Michael J. Fox was in on that season. So my wife and I were extras in a scene with Michael J. Fox. And then 5 years later, actually about 10 years later, just a couple years ago, you know, they're wrapping up the show. This is it. You know, he's like, hey, you know, if you ever want to be an extra, let me know. I'm like, yeah. So long story short, went out there May of 2021. It aired in December of 2021. And I had met Larry before. I had met JB Smoove before. And I had done a number of radio broadcasts with Jeff Garlin. I'd interviewed him a multiple times. So, and then Jeff, my friend, is the director. So basically, I was in a little scene in the golf club, country club. And I just, Larry was yelling at a woman who was basically getting widow privileges because her ex-husband just died, but it was a long convoluted thing. So I had to yell at him. But long story short, because I kind of, you know, knew Larry and knew the other people, I just was like a member of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the cast, the actual cast for an afternoon in May. It was awesome. And by the way, during every little intermission, Larry did not give a rat's ass about what I had to say about anything other than football. But when I was talking football, the floor was mine. They were riveted on my every word. Jeff's a big Bears fan. So in between takes, we're talking football. It was awesome. And of course, Larry had to tell the story. I called Mike Maccagnan. I told him to draft Lamar Jackson. They didn't listen. And true story. So then, of course, he's asking me about Zach Wilson. So think about this. This is going into 2021. He's like, what do you think of Zach Wilson? I'm like, Larry, I said, either he's going to be the greatest thing since Joe Namath, or he's going to crash and burn just like everyone else, and it's going to be an absolute dumpster fire. There's no in between. And we got that right, I guess.
That's fantastic.
That's a good story.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You could that episode is I don't know, look it up, but you could Google my name or whatever, IMDb it, but IMDb, yeah. And by the way, the late great Richard Lewis, he was in that scene as well, and he didn't know me. He thought I was just a regular actor, and at the end, you know, like JB Smoove, it was like his last scene of the season. So they do a big thing, like everyone stands up. I gave him a round of applause, and Richard Lewis is like looking at me like, oh, this is great. Isn't this great, fellow actor? And I'm like, yeah, this is great. You know, like,
that's great. Well, I'm definitely going to be going to IMDb to look that up and check out those appearances there. John, thank you again for taking the time on Super Bowl week to come out here and chat with us about all the prop bets, everything. Follow John on Twitter. Check out his work. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.
You got it, guys. Good luck with the plays, everybody.